I don't know how long she was in here. A few millennia seems a fair guess. Horror roiled in my gut. You never asked? Why bother? She'll tell me when it's necessary. Where did she come from? The brooch he'd given her, such a small gift for a monster who had once dwelled here. I don't know. Though there are legends that claim when the world was born, there were rips in the fabric of the realms, that in the chaos of forming, creatures from other worlds could walk through one of those rips and enter another world. But the rips closed at will, and the creatures could become trapped with no way home. It was more horrifying than I could fathom, both that monsters had walked between worlds, and the terror of being trapped in another realm. You think she was one of them? I think that she is the only one of her kind, and there is no record of others ever having existed. Even the Suriel have numbers, however small. But she, and some of those in the prison, I think they came from somewhere else, and they have been looking for a way home for a long, long time. I was shivering beneath the fur-lined leather, my breath clouding in front of me. Down and down we went, and time lost its grip. It could have been hours or days, and we paused only when my useless, wasted body demanded water. Even while I drank, he didn't let go of my hand, as if the rock would swallow me up forever. I made sure those breaks were swift and rare, and still we went onward, deeper. Only the lights and his hand kept me from feeling as if I were about to free fall into darkness. For a heartbeat, the reek of my own dungeon cell cloyed in my nose, and the crunch of moldy hay tickled my cheek. Reese's hand tightened on my own, just a bit farther. We must be near the bottom by now.
Past it.
The bone carver is caged beneath the roots of the mountain. Who is he? What is he? I'd only been briefed in what I was to say, nothing of what to expect. No doubt to keep me from panicking too thoroughly. No one knows. He'll appear as he wants to appear. Shapeshifter? Yes and no. He'll appear to you as one thing, and I might be standing right beside you and see another. I tried not to start bleeding like cattle. And the bone carving?
You'll see.
Reese stopped before a smooth slab of stone. The hall continued down, down into the ageless dark. The air here was tight, compact. Even my puffs of breath on the chill air seemed short-lived. Reese and at last released my hand, only to lay his once more on the bare stone. It rippled beneath his palm, forming a door. Like the gates above, it was of ivory, bone, and in its surface were etched countless images, flora and fauna, seas and clouds, stars and moons, infants and skeletons, creatures fair and foul. It swung away. The cell was pitch black, hardly distinguishable from the hall.
I have carved the doors for every prisoner in this place, said a small voice within, but my own remains my favorite.
I'd have to agree, Rhysand said. He stepped inside, the light bobbing ahead to illuminate a dark-haired boy sitting against the far wall, eyes of crushing blue taking in Rhysand, then sliding to where I lurked in the doorway. Reese reached into a bag I hadn't realized he'd been carrying. No, one he'd summoned from whatever pocket between realms he used for storage. He chucked an object toward the boy, who looked no more than 8. White gleamed as it clacked on the rough stone floor. Another bone, long and sturdy, and jagged on one end.
The calf bone that made the final kill when Feyre slew the Middengard worm,
Reese said. My very blood stilled. There had been many bones that I'd laid in my trap. I hadn't noticed which had ended the worm, or thought anyone would.
Come inside,
was all the bone carver said, and there was no innocence, no kindness in that child's voice. I took one step in, and no more.
It has been an age,
the boy said, gobbling down the sight of me,
since something new came into this world.
Hello, I breathed. The boy's smile was a mockery of innocence.
Are you frightened?
Yes, I said. Never lie. That had been Reese's first command. The boy stood, but he kept to the other side of the cell.
Feyre,
he murmured, cocking his head. The orb of Feylight glazed the inky hair in silver.
Feyre,
he said again, drawing out the syllables as if he could taste them. At last, he straightened his head.
Where did you go when you died?
A question for a question, I replied, as I'd been instructed over breakfast. The bone carver inclined his head to resand.
You were always smarter than your forefathers.
But those eyes alighted on me.
Tell me where you went, what you saw, and I will answer your question.
Rhys gave me a subtle nod, but his eyes were wary, because what the boy had asked. I had to calm my breathing to think, to remember. But there was blood and death and pain and screaming, and she was breaking me, killing me so slowly, and Rhys was there, roaring in fury as I died, Tamlin begging for my life on his knees before her throne. But there was so much agony, and I wanted it to be over, wanted it all to stop. Rhys had gone rigid while he monitored the bone carver, as if those memories were freely flowing past the mental shields I'd made sure were intact this morning. And I wondered if he thought I'd give up then and there. I bunched my hands into fists. I had lived. I had gotten out. I would get out today. I heard the crack, I said. Rhys's head whipped toward me. I heard the crack when she broke my neck. It was in my ears, but also inside my skull. I was gone before I felt anything more than the first lash of pain. The bone carver's violet eyes seemed to glow brighter. And then it was dark, a different sort of dark than this place. But there was a thread, I said, a tether, and I yanked on it, and suddenly I could see. Not through my eyes, but his, I said, inclining my head toward Rhys. I uncurled the fingers of my tattooed hand, and I knew I was dead. And this tiny scrap of spirit was all that was left of me, clinging to the thread of our bargain.
But was anyone there? Were you seeing anything beyond?
There was only that bond in the darkness. Rhys's face had gone pale, his mouth a tight line. And when I was made anew, I said, I followed that bond back, to me. I knew that home was on the other end of it. There was light then, like swimming up through sparkling wine.
Were you afraid?
All I wanted was to return to the people around me. I wanted it badly enough I didn't have room for fear. The worst had happened, and the darkness was calm and quiet. It did not seem like a bad thing to fade into. But I wanted to go home, so I followed the bond home.
There was no other world?
The bone carver pushed. If there was or is, I did not see it.
No light, no portal.
Where is it that you want to go? The question almost leaped off my tongue. It was only peace and darkness.
Did you have a body?
No.
Did—
That's enough from you, Rhysand purred, the sound like velvet over sharpest steel. You said a question for a question. Now you've asked. He did a tally on his fingers. 6. The bone carver leaned back against the wall and slid to a sitting position.
It is a rare day when I meet someone who comes back from true death. Forgive me for wanting to peer behind the curtain.
He waved a delicate hand in my direction.
Ask it, girl.
If there was no body, nothing but perhaps a bit of bone, I said as solidly as I could. Would there be a way to resurrect that person? To grow them a new body, put their soul into it? Those eyes flashed.
Was the soul somehow preserved? Contained?
I tried not to think about the eye ring Amarantha had worn, the soul she'd trapped inside to witness her every horror and depravity. Yes.
There is no way.
I almost sighed in relief.
Unless...
The boy bounced each finger off his thumb, his hand like some pale, twitchy insect.
Long ago, before the High Fae, before man, there was a cauldron. They say all the magic was contained inside it, that the world was born in it. But it fell into the wrong hands, and great and horrible things were done with it. Things were forged with it. Such wicked things that the cauldron was eventually stolen back at great cost. It could not be destroyed, for it had made all things, and if it were broken, then life would cease to be. So it was hidden and forgotten. Only with that cauldron could something that is dead be reforged like that.
Rhysand's face was again a mask of calm. Where did they hide it?
Tell me a secret no one knows, Lord of Night, and I'll tell you mine.
I braced myself for whatever horrible truth was about to come my way, but Rhysand said, My right knee gets a twinge of pain when it rains. I wrecked it during the war, and it's hurt ever since. The bone carver bit out a harsh laugh, even as I gaped at Rhys.
You were always my favorite,
he said, giving a smile I would never for a moment think was childlike.
Very well. The cauldron was hidden at the bottom of a frozen lake in Lapland.
Rhys began to turn for me, as if he'd head there right now, but the bone carver added,
And vanished a long, long time ago.
Rhys halted.
I don't know where it went to, or where it is now. Millennia before you were born, the 3 feet on which it stands were successfully cleaved from its base in an attempt to fracture some of its power. It worked, barely. Removing the feet was like cutting off the first knuckle of a finger. Irksome, but you could still use the rest with some difficulty. The feet were hidden at 3 different temples, Cesare, Sangrava, and Ithaca. If they have gone missing, it is likely the cauldron is active once more, and that the wielder wants it at full power, and not a wisp of it missing.
That was why the temples had been ransacked, to get the feet on which the cauldron stood and restore it to its full power, Rhys merely said. I don't suppose you know who now has the cauldron. The bone carver pointed a small finger at me.
Promise that you'll give me her bones when she dies, and I'll think about it.
I stiffened, but the boy laughed.
No, I don't think even you would promise that, Rhysand.
I might have called the look on Rhys's face a warning. Thank you for your help, he said, placing a hand on my back to guide me out. But if he knew... I turned again to the boy creature. There was a choice. In death, I said. Those eyes guttered with cobalt fire. Rhys's hand contracted on my back, but remained warm, steady, and I wondered if the touch was more to reassure him that I was there, still breathing. I knew, I went on, that I could drift away into the dark, and I chose to fight it, to hold on for a bit longer. Yet I knew if I wanted, I could have faded, and maybe it would be a new world, a realm of rest and peace, but I wasn't ready for it, not to go there alone. I knew there was something else waiting beyond that dark, something good. For a moment, those blue eyes flared brighter. Then the boy said,
You know who has the cauldron, Rhysand, who has been pillaging the temples. You only came here to confirm what you have long guessed.
The King of Highburn. Dread sluiced through my veins and pooled in my stomach. I shouldn't have been surprised, should have known, but... The carver said nothing more, waiting for another truth. So I offered up another shattered piece of me. When Amarantha made me kill those 2 fairies, if the 3rd hadn't been Tamlin, I would have put the dagger in my own heart at the end. Rhys went still. I knew there was no coming back from what I'd done, I said, wondering if the blue flame in the carver's eyes might burn my ruined soul to ash. And once I broke their curse, once I knew I'd saved them, I just wanted enough time to turn that dagger on myself. I only decided I wanted to live when she killed me, and I knew I had not finished whatever it was I'd been born to do. I dared a glance at Rhys, and there was something like devastation on his beautiful face. It was gone in a blink. Even the bone carver said gently,
With the cauldron, you could do other things than raise the dead. You could shatter the wall.
The only thing keeping human lands, my family, safe from not just Highburn, but any other fairies.
It is likely that Highburn has been quiet for so many years because he was hunting the cauldron, learning its secrets. Resurrection of a specific individual might very well have been his first test once the feet were reunited, and now he finds that the cauldron is pure energy, pure power, and like any magic, it can be depleted. So he will let it rest, let it gather strength, learn its secrets to feed it more energy, more power.
Is there a way to stop it? I breathed. Silence. Expectant, waiting silence. Reese's voice was hoarse as he said, "Don't offer him one more."
When the cauldron was made, the carver interrupted, its dark maker used the last of the molten ore to forge a book, the Book of Breathings. In it, written between the carved words, are the spells to negate the cauldron's power, or control it wholly. But after the war, it was split into two pieces. One went to the Fae, one to the six human queens. It was part of the treaty, purely symbolic, as the cauldron had been lost for millennia and considered mere myth. The book was believed harmless, because like calls to like, and only that which was made can speak those spells and summon its power. No creature born of the earth may wield it, so the High Lords and humans dismissed it as little more than a historical heirloom. But if the book were in the hands of something reforged, you would have to test such a theory, of course, but it might be possible.
His eyes narrowed to amused slits as I realized.
So, now the High Lord of Summer possesses our piece, and the reigning mortal queens have the other entombed in their shining palace by the sea. Prithian's half is guarded, protected with blood spells keyed to Summer himself. The one belonging to the mortal queens, they were crafty when they received their gift. They used our own kind to spell the book, to bind it, so that if it were ever stolen, if, let's say, a High Lord were to winnow into their castle to steal it, the book would melt into ore and be lost. It must be freely given by a mortal queen, with no trickery, no magic involved.
A little laugh.
Such clever, lovely creatures. Humans.
The carver seemed lost in ancient memory, then shook his head.
Reunite both halves of the Book of Breathings, and you will be able to nullify the powers of the cauldron, hopefully before it returns to full strength and shatters that wall.
I didn't bother saying thank you, not with the information he'd told us, not when I'd been forced to say those things and could still feel Reese's lingering attention, as if he'd suspected, but never believed just how badly I'd broken in that moment with Amarantha. We turned away, his hand sliding from my back to grip my hand. The touch was light, gentle, and I suddenly had no strength to even grip it back. The carver picked up the bone Rhysand had brought him and weighed it in those child's hands.
I shall carve your death in here, Feyre.
Up and up into the darkness we walked, through the sleeping stone and the monsters who dwelled within it. At last I said to Rhys, what did you see? You first. A boy, around 8, dark-haired and blue-eyed. Rhys shuddered, the most human gesture I'd seen him make. What did you see? I pushed.
Jurian, Rhys said. He appeared exactly as Jurian looked the last time I saw him, facing Amarantha when they fought to the death.
I didn't want to learn how the bone carver knew who we'd come to ask about. Chapter 19. Amryn's right, Rhys drawled, leaning against the threshold of the townhouse sitting room. You are like dogs, waiting for me to come home. Maybe I should buy treats. Cassian gave him a vulgar gesture from where he lounged on the couch before the hearth, an arm slung over the back behind Moor. Though everything about his powerful, muscled body suggested someone at ease, there was a tightness in his jaw, a coiled-up energy that told me they'd been waiting here for a while. Asriel lingered by the window, comfortably ensconced in shadows, a light flurry of snow dusting the lawn and street behind him. And Amryn, nowhere to be seen, I couldn't tell if I was relieved or not. I'd have to hunt her down to give her back the necklace soon, if Reese's warnings and her own words were to be believed. Damp and cold from the mist and wind that chased us down from the prison, I strode for the armchair across the couch, which had been shaped, like so much of the furniture here, to accommodate Illyrian wings. I stretched my stiff limbs toward the fire and stifled a groan at the delicious heat. "How'd it go?" Moore said, straightening beside Cassian. "No gown today, just practical black pants and a thick blue sweater."
"The bone carver," Reese said, "is a busybody gossip who likes to pry into other people's business far too much."
"But," Cassian demanded, bracing his arms on his knees, wings tucked in tight.
"But," Reese said, "he can also be helpful when he chooses. And it seems we need to start doing what we do best."
I flexed my numbed fingers, content to let them discuss, needing a moment to reel myself back in, to shut out what I'd revealed to the bone carver, and what the bone carver suggested I might actually be asked to do with that book, the abilities I might have. So Reese told them of the cauldron and the reason behind the temple pillagings, to no shortage of swearing and questions, and revealed nothing of what I had admitted in exchange for the information. Asriel emerged from his wreathing shadows to ask the most questions. His face and voice remained unreadable. Cassian, surprisingly, kept quiet, as if the general understood that the Shadow Singer would know what information was necessary, and was busy assessing it for his own forces. When Reese was done, his spymaster said,
"I'll contact my sources in the Summer Court about where the half of the Book of Breathings is hidden. I can fly into the human world myself to figure out where they're keeping their part of the book before we ask them for it."
"No need," Reese said, "and I don't trust this information, even with your sources, with anyone outside of this room, save for Amryn."
"They can be trusted," Asriel said with quiet steel, his scarred hands clenching at his leather-clad sides. "We're not taking risks where this is concerned," Reese merely said.
He held Asriel's stare, and I could almost hear the silent words Reese added.
"It is no judgment or reflection on you, Az. Not at all."
But Asriel yielded no tinge of emotion as he nodded, his hands unfurling. "So what do you have planned?" Moore cut in, perhaps for Az's sake. Reese picked an invisible piece of dirt off his fighting leathers. When he lifted his head, those violet eyes were glacial.
"The King of Highburn sacked one of our temples to get a missing piece of the cauldron. As far as I'm concerned, it's an act of war, an indication that His Majesty has no interest in wooing me."
"He likely remembers our allegiance to the humans in the war anyway," Cassian said. "He wouldn't jeopardize revealing his plans while trying to sway you. And I bet some of Amarantha's cronies reported to him about Under the Mountain. About how it all ended, I mean."
Cassian's throat bobbed. When Reese had tried to kill her. I lowered my hands from the fire. Reese said,
"Indeed. But this means Highburn's forces have already successfully infiltrated our lands, without detection. I plan to return the favor."
Mother above. Cassian and Moore just grinned with feral delight. "How?" Moore asked. Reese crossed his arms.
"It will require careful planning, but if the cauldron is in Highburn, then to Highburn we must go, either to take it back or use the book to nullify it."
Some cowardly, pathetic part of me was already trembling.
"Highburn likely has as many wards and shields around it as we have here,"
Asriel countered.
"We'd need to find a way to get through them undetected first."
A slight nod.
"Which is why we start now, while we hunt for the book. So when we get both halves, we can move swiftly, before word can spread that we even possess it."
Cassian nodded, but asked,
"How are you going to retrieve the book, then?"
I braced myself, as Reese said,
"Since these objects are spelled to the individual High Lords, and can only be found by them through their power. Then, in addition to her uses regarding the handling of the Book of Breathings itself, it seems we possibly have our own detector."
Now they all looked at me. I cringed. "Perhaps," was what the bone carver said in regard to me being able to track things. You don't know. My words faded as Rhys smirked.
You have a kernel of all our power, like having 7 thumbprints. If we've hidden something, if we've made or protected it with our power, no matter where it has been concealed, you will be able to track it through that very magic.
You can't know that for sure, I tried again.
No, but there is a way to test it. Rhys was still smiling. Here we go, Cassian grumbled.
Moore gave Asriel a warning glare to tell him not to volunteer this time. The spymaster just gave her an incredulous look in return. I might have lounged in my chair to watch their battle of wills, had Rhys not said,
With your abilities, Feyre, you might be able to find the half of the book at the summer court and break the wards around it. But I'm not going to take the Carver's word for it, or bring you there without testing you first. To make sure that when it counts, when we need to get that book, we do not fail. So we're going on another little trip, to see if you can find a valuable object of mine that I've been missing for a considerably long time.
Shit, Moore said, plunging her hands into the thick folds of her sweater.
Where? I managed to say.
It was Asriel who answered.
To the Weaver.
Rhys held up a hand as Cassian opened his mouth.
The test, he said, will be to see if Feyre can identify the object of mine in the Weaver's Trove. When we get to the summer court, Tarquin might have spelled his half of the book to look different, feel different.
By the cauldron, Rhys, Moore snapped, setting both feet on the carpet. Are you out of your...
Who is the Weaver? I pushed. An ancient, wicked creature,
Asriel said, and I surveyed the faint scars on his wings, his neck, and wondered how many such things he'd encountered in his immortal life, if they were any worse than the people who shared blood ties with him.
Who should remain unbothered,
he added in Rhys's direction.
Find another way to test her abilities.
Rhys merely shrugged and looked to me, to let me choose, always. It was always my choice with him these days. Yet he hadn't let me go back to the spring court during those 2 visits, because he knew how badly I needed to get away from it. I gnawed on my lower lip, weighing the risks, waiting to feel any kernel of fear, of emotion. But this afternoon had drained any reserve of such things. The bone carver, the weaver, can't you ever just call someone by a given name?
Cassian chuckled, and Moore settled back in the sofa cushions. Only Rhys, it seemed, understood that it hadn't entirely been a joke.
His face was tight, like he knew precisely how tired I was, how I knew I should be quaking at the thought of this weaver, but after the bone carver, what I'd revealed to it, I could feel nothing at all.
Rhys said to me, What about adding one more name to that list?
I didn't particularly like the sound of that. Moore said as much.
Emissary,
Rhysand said, ignoring his cousin.
Emissary to the Night Court, for the human realm.
Asriel said,
There hasn't been one for 500 years, Rhys.
There also hasn't been a human turned immortal since then either.
Rhys met my gaze.
The human world must be as prepared as we are, especially if the King of Hybern plans to shatter the wall and unleash his forces upon them. We need the other half of the book from those mortal queens, and if we can't use magic to influence them, then they're going to have to bring it to us.
More silence. On the street beyond the Bay of Windows, wisps of snow brushed past, dusting the cobblestones. Rhys jerked his chin at me.
You are an immortal fairy with a human heart. Even as such, you might very well set foot on the continent and be hunted for it. So we set up a base in neutral territory, in a place where humans trust us, trust you, Feyre, and where other humans might risk going to meet you, to hear the voice of Prithian after 5 centuries.
My family's estate, I said.
Mother's tits, Rhys, Cassian cut in, wings flaring wide enough to nearly knock over the ceramic vase on the side table next to him. You think we can just take over her family's house, demand that of them?
Nesta hadn't wanted any dealings with the Fae, and Elaine was so gentle, so sweet. How could I bring them into this?
The land, Moore said, reaching over to return the vase to its place.
We'll run red with blood, Cassian, regardless of what we do with her family. It is now a matter of where that blood will flow and how much will spill, how much human blood we can save. And maybe it made me a cowardly fool, but I said, the Spring Court borders the wall.
The wall that stretches across the sea. We'll fly in offshore,
Rhys said without so much as a blink.
I won't risk discovery from any court, though word might spread quickly enough once we're there. I know it won't be easy, Feyre, but if there's any way you could convince those queens...
I'll do it, I said. Claire Better's broken and nailed body flashed in my vision. Amarantha had been one of his commanders, just one of many. The King of Highburn had to be horrible beyond reckoning to be her master. If these people got their hands on my sisters... They might not be happy about it, but I'll make Elaine and Nesta do it. I didn't have the nerve to ask Rhys if he could simply force my family to agree to help us if they refused. I wonder if his powers would work on Nesta, when even Tamlin's glamour had failed against her steel mind.
Then it's settled, Rhys said. None of them looked particularly happy. Once Feyre Darling returns from the Weaver, we'll bring Highburn to its knees.
Rhys and the others were gone that night. Where, no one told me. But after the events of the day, I barely finished devouring the food Nuala and Caradwyn brought to my room before I tumbled into sleep. I dreamed of a long white bone, carved with horrifying accuracy. My face, twisted in agony and despair, the ash knife in my hand, a pool of blood leaking away from two corpses. But I awoke to the watery light of winter dawn, my stomach full from the night before. A mere minute after I'd risen to consciousness, Rhys knocked on my door. I'd barely granted him permission to enter before he stalked inside like a midnight wind and chucked a belt hung with knives onto the floor of the bed.
Hurry,
he said, flinging open the doors of the armoire and yanking out my fighting leathers. He tossed them onto the bed, too.
I want to be gone before the sun is fully up.
Why? I said, pushing back the covers. No wings today.
Because time is of the essence.
He dug out my socks and boots.
Once the King of Highburn realizes that someone is searching for the Book of Breathings to nullify the powers of the cauldron, then his agents will begin hunting for it too.
You suspected this for a while, though. I hadn't had the chance to discuss it with him last night. The cauldron, the king, the book? You wanted it confirmed, but you were waiting for me.
Had you agreed to work with me 2 months ago, I would have taken you right to the bone carver to see if he confirmed my suspicions about your talents. But things didn't go as planned.
No, they most certainly hadn't. The reading, I said, sliding my feet into fleece-lined, thick-soled slippers. That's why you insisted on the lessons. So if your suspicions were true and I could harness the book, I could actually read it, or any translation of whatever is inside. A book that old might very well be written in an entirely different language, a different alphabet.
Again, he said, now striding for the dresser. Had you started to work with me, I would have told you why. I couldn't risk discovery otherwise.
He paused with a hand on the knob.
You should have learned to read no matter what. But yes, when I told you it served my own purposes, it was because of this. Do you blame me for it?
No, I said, and meant it. But I'd prefer to be notified of any future schemes.
Duly noted.
Rhys yanked open the drawers and pulled out my undergarments. He dangled the bits of midnight lace and chuckled.
I'm surprised you didn't demand Nuala and Caradwyn buy you something else.
I stalked to him, snatching the lace away. You're drooling on the carpet. I slammed the bathing room door before he could respond. He was waiting as I emerged, already warm within the fur-lined leather. He held up the belt of knives, and I studied the loops and straps.
No swords, no bow or arrows, he said.
He'd worn his own Illyrian fighting leathers, that simple, brutal sword strapped down his spine. But knives are fine? Rhys knelt and spread wide the web of leather and steel, beckoning for me to stick a leg through one loop. I did as instructed, ignoring the brush of his steady hands on my thighs, as I stepped through the other loop, and he began tightening and buckling things.
She will not notice a knife, as she has knives in her cottage for eating and her work. But things that are out of place, objects that might not have been there, a sword, a bow and arrow, she might sense those things.
What about me? He tightened a strap. Strong, capable hands, so at odds with the finery he usually wore to dazzle the rest of the world into thinking he was something else entirely.
Do not make a sound. Do not touch anything but the object she took from me.
Rhys looked up, hands braced on my thighs. Bow, he'd once ordered Tamlin. And now here he was, on his knees before me. His eyes glinted as if he remembered it too. Had that been a part of his game, that facade? Or had it been vengeance for the horrible blood feud between them?
If we're correct about your powers, he said, if the bone carver wasn't lying to us, then you and the object will have the same imprint, thanks to the preserving spells I placed on it long ago. You are one and the same. She will not notice your presence so long as you touch only it. You will be invisible to her.
She's blind?
A nod. But her other senses are lethal, so be quick and quiet. Find the object and run out, Feyre.
His hands lingered on my legs, wrapping around the back of them. And if she notices me?
His hands tightened slightly.
Then we'll learn precisely how skilled you are. Cruel, conniving bastard. I glared at him. Rhys shrugged.
Would you rather I locked you in the House of Wind and stuffed you with food and made you wear fine clothes and plan my parties?
Go to hell. Why not get this object yourself if it's so important?
Because the Weaver knows me, and if I am caught, there would be a steep price. High lords are not to interfere with her, no matter the direness of the situation. There are many treasures in her hoard, some she has kept for millennia. Most will never be retrieved, because the High Lords do not dare be caught, thanks to the laws that protect her, thanks to her wrath. Any thieves on their behalf, either they do not return, or they are never sent, for fear of it leading back to their High Lord. But you, she does not know you. You belong to every court.
So I'm your huntress and thief? His hands slid down to cup the backs of my knees, as he said with a roguish grin,
You are my salvation, Feyre.
Chapter 20 Rhys and winnowed us into a wood that was older, more aware than any place I'd been. The gnarled beech trees were tightly woven together, splattered and draped so thoroughly with moss and lichen, that it was nearly impossible to see the bark beneath.
Where are we?
I breathed, hardly daring to whisper.
Rhys kept his hands within casual reach of his weapons. In the heart of Prithian, there is a large empty territory that divides the north and south. At the center of it is our sacred mountain.
My heart stumbled, and I focused on my steps through the ferns and moss and roots.
This forest, Rhys went on, is on the eastern edge of that neutral territory. Here, there is no High Lord. Here, the law is made by who is strongest, meanest, most cunning. And the Weaver of the Wood is at the top of their food chain.
The trees groaned, though there was no breeze to shift them. No, the air here was tight and stale. Amarantha didn't wipe them out?
Amarantha was no fool. Rhys said, his face dark. She did not touch these creatures or disturb the wood. For years, I tried to find ways to manipulate her to make that foolish mistake, but she never bought it.
And now we're disturbing her, for a mere test. He chuckled,
the sound bouncing off the gray stones strewn across the forest floor like scattered marbles. Cassian tried to convince me last night not to take you. I thought he might even punch me.
Why? I barely knew him.
Who knows? With Cassian, he's probably more interested in fucking you than protecting you.
You're a pig.
You could, you know,
Rhys said, holding up the branch of a scrawny beech for me to slip under.
If you needed to move on in a physical sense, I'm sure Cassian would be more than happy to oblige.
It felt like a test in itself, and it pissed me off enough that I crooned,
Then tell him to come to my room tonight.
If you survive this test.
I paused atop a little lichen-crusted rock. You seem pleased by the idea that I won't.
Quite the opposite, Feyre.
He prowled to where I stood on the stone. I was almost eye-level with him. The forest went even quieter, the trees seeming to lean closer, as if to catch every word.
I'll let Cassian know you're open to his advances.
Good, I said.
A bit of hollowed-out air pushed against me, like a flicker of night. That power along my bones and blood stirred in answer.
I made to jump off the stone, but he gripped my chin, the movement too fast to detect. His words were a lethal caress as he said,
Did you enjoy the sight of me kneeling before you?
I knew he could hear my heart as it ratcheted into a thunderous beat. I gave him a hateful little smirk anyway, yanking my chin out of his touch and leaping off the stone. I might have aimed for his feet, and he might have shifted out of the way just enough to avoid it. Isn't that all you males are good for anyway? But the words were tight, near breathless. His answering smile evoked silken sheets and jasmine-scented breezes at midnight. A dangerous line. One Rhys was forcing me to walk to keep me from thinking about what I was about to face, about what a wreck I was inside. Anger, this flirtation, annoyance. He knew those were my crutches. What I was about to encounter then must be truly harrowing if he wanted me going in there mad, thinking about sex, about anything but the Weaver of the Wood. Nice try, I said hoarsely. Rhysand just shrugged and swaggered off into the trees ahead. Bastard. Yes, it had been to distract me, but I stormed after him as silently as I could, intent on tackling him and slamming my fist into his spine. But he held up a hand as he stopped before a clearing. A small, whitewashed cottage with a thatched roof and half-crumbling chimney sat in the center. Ordinary, almost mortal. There was even a well, its bucket perched on the stone lip, and a woodpile beneath one of the round windows of the cottage. No sound or light within, not even smoke puffed from the chimney. The few birds in the forest fell quiet, not entirely, but to keep their chatter to a minimum, and there, faint, coming from inside the cottage, was a pretty steady humming. It might have been the sort of place I would have stopped if I were thirsty or hungry or in need of shelter for the night. Maybe that was the trap. The trees around the clearing, so close that their branches nearly clawed at the thatched roof, might very well have been the bars of a cage. Rhys inclined his head toward the cottage, bowing with dramatic grace. In, out, don't make a sound. Find whatever object it was and snatch it from beneath a blind person's nose, and then run like hell. Mossy earth paved the way to the front door, already cracked slightly. A bit of cheese, and I was the foolish mouse about to fall for it. Eyes twinkling, Rhys mouthed, good luck. I gave him a vulgar gesture, and slowly, silently, made my way toward the front door. The woods seemed to monitor each of my steps. When I glanced behind, Rhys was gone. He hadn't said if he'd interfere if I were in mortal peril. I probably should have asked. I avoided any leaves and stones, falling into a pattern of movement that some part of my body, some part that was not born of the High Lords, remembered. Like waking up. That's what it felt like. I passed the well. Not a speck of dirt, not a stone out of place. A perfect, pretty trap, that mortal part of me warned. A trap designed from a time when humans were prey, now laid for a smarter, immortal sort of game. I was not prey any longer, I decided, as I eased up to that door. And I was not a mouse. I was a wolf. I listened on the threshold, the rock worn as if many, many boots had passed through, and perhaps never passed back over again. The words of her song became clear now, her voice sweet and beautiful, like sunlight on a stream.
There were two sisters, they went playing, to see their father's ships come sailing. And when they came unto the sea brim, the elder did push the younger in.
A honeyed voice for an ancient, horrible song. I'd heard it before, slightly different, but sung by humans who had no idea that it had come from fairy throats. I listened for another moment, trying to hear anyone else, but there was only a clatter and thrum of some sort of device, and the weaver's song.
Sometimes she sank, and sometimes she swam, till her corpse came to the miller's dam.
My breath was tight in my chest, but I kept it even, directing it through my mouth in silent breaths. I eased open the front door, just an inch. No squeak, no whine of rusty hinges. Another piece of the pretty trap, practically inviting thieves in. I peered inside when the door had opened wide enough. A large main room, with a small shut door in the back. Floor-to-ceiling shelves lined the walls, crammed with bric-a-brac. Books, shells, dolls, herbs, pottery, shoes, crystals, more books, jewels. From the ceiling and wood rafters hung all manner of chains, dead birds, dresses, ribbons, gnarled bits of wood, strands of pearls. A junk shop of some sort of immortal hoarder. And that hoarder? In the gloom of the cottage, there sat a large spinning wheel, cracked and dulled with age. And before that ancient spinning wheel, her back to me, sat the weaver. Her thick hair was of richest onyx, tumbling down to her slender waist as she worked the wheel, snow-white hands feeding and pulling the thread around a thorn-sharp spindle. She looked young, her gray gown simple but elegant, sparkling faintly in the dim forest light through the windows, as she sang in a voice of glittering gold.
But what did he do with her breastbone? He made him a viol to play on. What did he do with her fingers so small? He made pegs to his viol withal.
The fiber she fed into the wheel was white, soft, like wool, but I knew, in that lingering human part of me, it was not wool. I knew that I did not want to learn what creature it had come from, who she was spinning into thread. Because on the shelf directly beyond her were cones upon cones of threads, of every color and texture, and on the shelf adjacent to her were swaths and yards of that woven thread. Woven, I realized, on the massive loom nearly hidden in the darkness near the hearth, the weaver's loom. I had come on spinning day. Would she have been singing if I had come on weaving day instead? From the strange, fear-drenched scent that came from those bolts of fabric, I already knew the answer. A wolf. I was a wolf. I stepped into the cottage, careful of the scattered debris on the earthen floor. She kept working, the wheel clattering so merrily, so at odds with her horrible song.
And what did he do with her nose ridge? Unto his vial he made a bridge. What did he do with her veins so blue? He made strings to his vial thereto.
I scanned the room, trying not to listen to the lyrics. Nothing. I felt nothing that might pull me toward one object in particular. Perhaps it would be a blessing if I were indeed not the one to track the book, if today was not the start of what was sure to be a slew of miseries. The weaver perched there, working. I scanned the shelves, the ceiling. Borrowed time. I was on borrowed time, and I was almost out of it. Had Reese sent me on a fool's errand? Maybe there was nothing here. Maybe this object had been taken. It would be just like him to do that, to tease me in the woods, to see what sort of things might make my body react. And maybe I resented Tamlin enough in that moment to enjoy that deadly bit of flirtation. Maybe I was as much a monster as the female spinning before me. But if I was a monster, then I supposed Reese was as well. Reese and I were one in the same, beyond the power that he'd given me. It'd be fitting if Tamlin hated me too, once he realized I'd truly left. I felt it then, like a tap on my shoulder. I pivoted, keeping one eye on the weaver and the other on the room as I wove through the maze of tables and junk. Like a beacon, a bit of light laced with his half-smile, it tugged me. "Hello," it seemed to say. "Have you come to claim me at last?" Yes, yes, I wanted to say, even as part of me wished it were otherwise. The weaver sang behind me.
What did he do with her eyes so bright? On his vial he set it first light. What did he do with her tongue so rough? 'Twas the new till, and it spoke enough.
I followed that pulse, toward the shelf lining the wall beside the hearth. Nothing, and nothing on the second, but the third, right above my eyeline. There. I could almost smell his salt and citrus scent. The bone carver had been correct. I rose on my toes to examine the shelf. An old letter knife, books in leather that I did not want to touch or smell, a handful of acorns, a tarnished crown of ruby and jasper, and a ring. A ring of twisted strands of gold and silver, flecked with pearl, and set with a stone of deepest solid blue. Sapphire, but different. I'd never seen a sapphire like that, even at my father's offices. This one. I could have sworn that in the pale light, the lines of a six-pointed star radiated across the round, opaque surface. Reese. This had Reese written all over it. He'd sent me here for a ring? The weaver sang.
Then bespake the treble string. Oh, yonder is my father the king.
I watched her for another heartbeat, gauging the distance between the shelf and the open door. Grab the ring, and I could be gone in a heartbeat, quick, quiet, calm.
Then bespake the second string. Oh, yonder sits my mother the queen.
I dropped a hand toward one of the knives strapped to my thighs. When I got back to Reese, maybe I'd stab him in the gut. That fast, the memory of phantom blood covered my hands. I knew how it'd feel to slide my dagger through his skin and bones and flesh, knew how the blood would dribble out, how he'd groan in pain. I shut out the thought, even as I could feel the blood of those fairies soaking that human part of me that hadn't died and belonged to no one but my miserable self.
Then bespake the strings all three. Yonder is my sister that drowned me.
My hand was quiet as a final dying breath as I plucked the ring from the shelf. The weaver stopped singing. Chapter 21. I froze, the ring now in the pocket of my jacket. She'd finished the last song, maybe she'd start another. Maybe. The spinning wheel slowed. I backed a step toward the door, then another. Slower and slower, each rotation of the ancient wheel longer than the last. Only 10 steps to the door. 5. The wheel went round, one last time, so slow I could see each of the spokes. 2. I turned for the door as she lashed out with a white hand, gripping the wheel and stopping it wholly. The door before me snicked shut. I lunged for the handle, but there was none. Window. Get to the window.
Who is in my house?
She said softly. Fear. Undiluted, unbroken fear slammed into me, and I remembered. I remembered what it was to be human and helpless and weak. I remembered what it was to want to fight, to live, to be willing to do anything to stay breathing. I reached the window beside the door, sealed. No latch, no opening, just glass that was not glass, solid and impenetrable. The weaver turned her face toward me. Wolf or mouse, it made no difference, because I became no more than an animal, sizing up my chance of survival. Above her young, supple body, beneath her black, beautiful hair, her skin was gray, wrinkled and sagging and dry. And where eyes should have gleamed, instead lay rotting black pits. Her lips had withered to nothing but deep dark lines around a hole full of jagged stumps of teeth, like she had gnawed on too many bones. And I knew she would be gnawing on my bones soon if I did not get out. Her nose, perhaps once pert and pretty, now half caved in, flared as she sniffed in my direction.
What are you?
She said in a voice that was so young and lovely. Out, out, I had to get out. There was another way, one suicidal, reckless way. I did not want to die. I did not want to be eaten. I did not want to go into that sweet darkness. The weaver rose from her little stool. And I knew my borrowed time had run out.
What is like all,
she mused, taking one graceful step toward me,
but unlike all.
I was a wolf, and I bit when cornered. I lunged for the sole candle burning on the table in the center of the room, and hurled it against the wall of woven thread, against all those miserable dark bolts of fabric, woven bodies, skins, lives. Let them be free. Fire erupted, and the weaver's shriek was so piercing I thought my head might shatter, thought my blood might boil in its veins. She dashed for the flames, as if she'd put them out with those flawless white hands, her mouth of rotted teeth open and screaming like there was nothing but black hell inside her. I hurtled for the darkened hearth, for the fireplace and chimney above. A tight squeeze, but wide, wide enough for me. I didn't hesitate as I grabbed onto the ledge and hauled myself up, arms buckling. Immortal strength. It only got me so far, and I'd become so weak, so malnourished. I had let them make me weak, bent to it like some wild horse broken to the bit. The soot-stained bricks were loose, uneven, perfect for climbing. Faster. I had to go faster. But my shoulders scraped against the brick, and it reeked in here, like carrion and burned hair, and there was an oily sheen on the stone, like cooked fat. The weaver's screaming was cut short as I was halfway up her chimney, sunlight and trees almost visible, every breath a near sob. I reached for the next brick, fingernails breaking as I hauled myself up so violently that my arms barked in protest against the squeezing of the stone around me, and I was stuck. Stuck, as the weaver hissed from within her house.
What little mouse is climbing about in my chimney?
I had just enough room to look down as the weaver's rotted face appeared below. She put that milk-white hand on the ledge, and I realized how little room there was between us. My head emptied out. I pushed against the grip of the chimney, but couldn't budge. I was going to die here. I was going to be dragged down by those beautiful hands and ripped apart and eaten. Maybe while I was still alive, she'd set that hideous mouth on my flesh and gnaw and tear and bite and... Black panic crushed in, and I was again trapped under a nearby mountain, in a muddy trench, the Midengard worm barreling for me. I'd barely escaped, barely. I couldn't breathe, couldn't breathe, couldn't breathe. The weaver's nails scratched against the brick as she took a step up. No, 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 no! I kicked and kicked against the bricks.
Did you think you could steal and flee, thief?
I would have preferred the Midengard worm, would have preferred those massive sharp teeth to her jagged stumps. Stop. The word came out of the darkness of my mind, and the voice was my own. Stop, it said. I said. Breathe. Think. The weaver came closer, brick crumbling under her hands. She'd climb up like a spider, like I was a fly in her web. Stop. And that word quieted everything. I mouthed it. Stop. 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 Think. I had survived the worm, survived Amarantha, and I had been granted gifts, considerable gifts, like strength. I was strong. I slammed a hand against the chimney wall, as low as I could get. The weaver hissed at the debris that rained down. I smashed my fist again, rallying that strength. I was not a pet, not a doll, not an animal. I was a survivor, and I was strong. I would not be weak or helpless again. I would not, could not be broken, tamed. I pounded my fist into the bricks over and over, and the weaver paused. Paused long enough for the brick I'd loosened to slide free into my waiting palm, and for me to hurl it at her hideous, horrible face as hard as I could. Bone crunched, and she roared, black blood spraying. But I rammed my shoulders into the sides of the chimney, skin tearing beneath my leather. I kept going, going, going until I was stone breaking stone, until nothing and no one held me back, and I was scaling the chimney. I didn't dare stop, not as I reached the lip and hauled myself out, tumbling onto the thatched roof, which was not thatched with hay at all, but hair. And with all that fat lining the chimney, all that fat now gleaming on my skin, the hair clung to me, in clumps and strands and tufts. Bile rose, but the front door banged open, a shriek following it. No, not that way, not to the ground. Up, up. Up. A tree branch hung low and close by, and I scrambled across that heinous roof, trying not to think about who and what I was stepping on, what clung to my skin, my clothes. A heartbeat later, I jumped onto the waiting branch, scrambling into the leaves and moss as the weaver screamed, "Where are you?" But I was running through the tree, running toward another one nearby. I leaped from branch to branch, bare hands tearing on the wood. Where was Rhysand?
Farther and farther I fled, her screams chasing me, though they grew ever distant. Where are you? Where are you? Where are you? And then, lounging on a branch in a tree before me, one arm draped over the edge, Rhysand drawled, "What the hell did you do?" I skidded to a stop, breathing raw. I thought my lungs might actually be bleeding. "You," I hissed. But he raised a finger to his lips and winnowed me, grabbing my waist with one hand and cupping the back of my neck with his other as he spirited us away to Velaris, to just above the House of Wind. We free fell, and I didn't have breath to scream as his wings appeared spreading wide, and he curved us into a steady glide, right through the open windows of what had to be a war room. Cassian was there, in the middle of arguing with Amryn about something. Both froze as we landed on the red floor. There was a mirror on the wall behind them, and I glimpsed myself long enough to know why they were gaping. My face was scratched and bloody, and I was covered in dirt and grease, boiled fat, and mortar dust. The hair stuck to me, and I smelled... "You smell like barbecue," Amryn said, cringing a bit. Cassian loosened the hand he'd wrapped around the fighting knife at his thigh. I was still panting, still trying to gobble down breath, the hair clinging to me scratched and tickled, and... "You kill her?" Cassian said. "No," Rhys answered for me, loosely folding his wings. "But given how much the Weaver was screaming, I'm dying to know what Feyre Darling did." Grease. I had the grease and hair of people on me. I vomited all over the floor. Cassian swore, but Amryn waved a hand and it was instantly gone, along with the mess on me. But I could feel the ghost of it there, the remnants of people, the mortar of those bricks. "She detected me somehow," I managed to say, slumping against the large black table and wiping my mouth against the shoulder of my leathers, "and locked the doors and windows, so I had to climb out through the chimney. I got stuck," I added as Cassian's brows rose, "and when she tried to climb up, I threw a brick at her face." Silence. Amryn looked to Rhysand. "And where were you?"
"Waiting, far enough away that she couldn't detect me."
I snarled at him. "I could have used some help."
"You survived," he said, "and found a way to help yourself."
From the hard glimmer in his eye, I knew he was aware of the panic that had almost gotten me killed, either through mental shields I'd forgotten to raise, or whatever anomaly in our bond. He'd been aware of it, and let me endure it, because it had almost gotten me killed, and I'd be no use to him if it happened when it mattered, with the book, exactly like he'd said. "That's what this was also about," I spat. "Not just this stupid ring." I reached into my pocket, slamming the ring down on the table, "or my abilities. But if I can master my panic..." Cassian swore again, his eyes on that ring. Amryn shook her head, a sheet of dark hair swaying. Brutal, but effective. Rhys only said,
"Now you know, that you can use your abilities to hunt our objects, and thus track the book at the summer court, and master yourself."
"You're a prick, Rhysand," Cassian said quietly. Rhys merely tucked his wings in with a graceful snap.
"You'd do the same."
Cassian shrugged, as if to say, fine, he would. I looked at my hands, my nails bloody and cracked, and I said to Cassian,
"I want you to teach me how to fight, to get strong, if the offer to train still stands."
Cassian's brows rose, and he didn't bother looking to Rhys for approval.
"You'll be calling me a prick pretty damn fast if we train, and I don't know anything about training humans, how breakable your bodies are. Were, I mean," he added with a wince. "We'll figure it out."
"I don't want my only option to be running," I said.
"Running," Amryn cut in, "kept you alive today."
I ignored her.
"I want to know how to fight my way out. I don't want to have to wait on anyone to rescue me."
I faced Rhys, crossing my arms. "Well, have I proved myself?" But he merely picked up the ring and gave me a nod of thanks.
"It was my mother's ring."
As if that were all the explanation and answers owed.
"How'd you lose it?" I demanded. "I didn't. My mother gave it to me as a keepsake, then took it back when I reached maturity.
and gave it to the weaver for safekeeping. Why? So I wouldn't waste it. Nonsense and idiocy, and I wanted a bath. I wanted quiet and a bath. The need for those things hit me strong enough that my knees buckled. I barely looked at Rhys before he grabbed my hand, flared his wings, and had us soaring back through the windows. We free-fell for 5 thunderous wild heartbeats before he winnowed to my bedroom in the townhouse. A hot bath was already running. I staggered to it, exhaustion hitting me like a physical blow, when Rhys said, "And what about training your other gifts?" Through the rising steam from the tub, I said, "I think you and I would shred each other to bits."
"Oh, we most definitely will."
He leaned against the bathing room threshold. "But it wouldn't be fun otherwise. Consider our training now officially part of your work requirements with me." A jerk of the chin. "Go ahead. Try to get past my shields." I knew which ones he was talking about. "I'm tired. The bath will go cold."
"I promise it'll be just as hot in a few moments. Or, if you mastered your gifts, you might be able to take care of that yourself."
I frowned, but took a step toward him, then another, making him yield a step, 2, into the bedroom. The phantom grease and hair clung to me, reminding me what he'd done. I held his stare, those violet eyes twinkling.
"You feel it, don't you?"
he said, over the burbling and chittering garden birds. "Your power, stalking under your skin, purring in your ear."
"So what if I do?"
A shrug.
"I'm surprised Ianthe didn't carve you up on an altar to see what that power looks like inside you."
"What precisely is your issue with her?"
"I find the High Priestesses to be a perversion of what they once were, once promised to be. Ianthe among the worst of them."
A knot twisted in my stomach. "Why do you say that?"
"Get past my shields, and I'll show you."
So that explained the turn in conversation. A taunt, bait. Holding his stare, I let myself fall for it. I let myself imagine that line between us, a bit of braided light, and there was his mental shield at the other end of the bond, black and solid and impenetrable, no way in. However I'd slipped through before, I had no idea.
"I've had enough tests for the day."
Rhys crossed the 2 feet between us.
"The High Priestesses have burrowed into a few of the courts, dawn, day, and winter, mostly. They've entrenched themselves so thoroughly that their spies are everywhere, their followers near fanatic with devotion. And yet, during those 50 years, they escaped. They remained hidden. I would not be surprised if Ianthe sought to establish a foothold in the Spring Court."
"You mean to tell me they're all black-hearted villains?"
"No. Some, yes. Some are compassionate and selfless and wise. But there are some who are merely self-righteous, though those are the ones that always seem the most dangerous to me."
"And Ianthe?" A knowing sparkle in his eyes. "He really wouldn't tell me. He'd dangle it before me like a piece of meat." I lunged, blindly, wildly, but I sent my power lashing down that line between us, and yelped as it slammed against his inner shields, the reverberations echoing in me as surely as if I'd hit something with my body. Rhys chuckled, and I saw fire.
"Admirable. Sloppy, but an admirable effort."
Panting a bit, I seethed, but he said, "Just for trying," and took my hand in his. The bond went taut, that thing under my skin pulsing, and there was dark, and the colossal sense of him on the other side of his mental barricade of black adamant. That shield went on forever, the product of 50 millennia of being hunted, attacked, hated. I brushed a mental hand against that wall. Like a mountain cat arching into a touch, it seemed to purr, and then relaxed its guard. His mind opened for me. An antechamber, at least, a single space he'd carved out to allow me to see. A bedroom carved from obsidian, a mammoth bed of ebony sheets, large enough to accommodate wings, and on it, sprawled in nothing but her skin, lay Ianthe. I reeled back, realizing it was a memory, and Ianthe was in his bed, in his court beneath that mountain, her full breasts peaked against the chill.
"There is more,"
Reese's voice said from far away, as I struggled to pull out. But my mind slammed into the shield, the other side of it. He'd trapped me in here.
You kept me waiting,
Ianthe sulked. The sensation of hard, carved wood digging into my back, Rhysand's back, as he leaned against the bedroom door.
Get out.
Ianthe gave a little pout, bending her knee and shifting her legs wider, baring herself to him.
I see the way you look at me, High Lord.
You see what you want to see,
we said. The door opened beside him.
Get out.
A coy tilt of her lips.
I heard you like to play games.
Her slender hand drifted low, trailing past her belly button.
I think you'll find me a diverting playmate.
I see wrath crept through me, him, as he debated the merits of splattering her on the walls, and how much of an inconvenience it'd cause. She'd hounded him relentlessly, stalked the other males, too. Asriel had left last night because of it, and Moore was about one more comment away from snapping her neck.
I thought your allegiance lay with other courts.
His voice was so cold, the voice of the High Lord.
My allegiance lies with the future of Prithian, with the true power in this land.
Her fingers slid between her legs and halted. Her gasp cleaved the room as he sent a tendril of power blasting for her, pinning that arm to the bed, away from herself.
Do you know what a union between us could do for Prithian? For the world?
She said, eyes devouring him still.
You mean yourself?
Our offspring could rule Prithian.
Cruel amusement danced through him.
So you want my crown, and for me to play stud?
She tried to writhe her body, but his power held her.
I don't see anyone else worthy of the position.
She'd be a problem, now and later. He knew it. Kill her now, end the threat before it began, face the wrath of the other high priestesses, or see what happened.
Get out of my bed, get out of my room, and get out of my court.
He released his power's grip to allow her to do so. Ianthe's eyes darkened, and she slithered to her feet, not bothering with her clothes draped over his favorite chair. Each step toward him had her generous breasts bobbing. She stopped barely a foot away.
You have no idea what I can make you feel, High Lord.
She reached a hand for him, right between his legs. His power lashed around her fingers before she could grab him. He crunched the power down, twisting. Ianthe screamed. She tried backing away, but his power froze her in place. So much power, so easily controlled, roiling around her, contemplating ending her existence like an asp surveying a mouse. Reese leaned close to breathe into her ear.
Don't ever touch me. Don't ever touch another male in my court.
His power snapped bones and tendons, and she screamed again.
Your hand will heal, he said, stepping back. The next time you touch me, or anyone in my lands, you will find that the rest of you will not fare so well.
Tears of agony ran down her face, the effect wasted by the hatred lighting her eyes.
You will regret this, she hissed.
He laughed softly, a lover's laugh, and a flicker of power had her thrown onto her ass in the hallway.